Merci.
More often than not, when somebody's struggling with money, it's guilt, it's shame, it's fear of being greedy or selfish or not being fair.
Hi, I'm Dr. Irene O'Brien, and you're listening to Neuroscience of Coaching. I'm a cognitive neuroscientist with almost 30 years of study and practice in psychology and neuroscience. And as the founder of the Neuroscience School, I teach coaches and other wellness professionals practical, evidence-based strategies to use in their own practices. I'm passionate about uncomplicating these subjects and clarifying misinformation to help more people understand their unwanted behaviors as well as their power to change them. In each episode, I introduce a topic or concept that coaching clients struggle with, bringing listeners the latest scientific research in psychology and neuroscience. I invite a seasoned coach to discuss the topic with me, and together, we provide you with useful, science-based tools to help your clients reach their goals by working with their brains to create results that last. To start with, let me ask you a question. What problematic emotions do you experience on a regular basis? Is it worry, stress, or sadness, or something else? I often feel anxious when starting something new or embarking on a demanding task. Often, when we feel those emotions that we label as problematic, we just want that emotion to go away. We don't want to feel it, so we try to resist it, deny it, and sweep it under the rug. But when you do that, the emotion continues to interfere with the ability of our prefrontal cortex to move forward, to take whatever action you're trying to take. Before I bring on my guest, I'm going to give you two quick ways to reduce the immediate emotional charge of problematic emotions. But first, I'm going to explain what's happening in your brain when you feel those emotions in the first place. Emotionally salient information, let's say it's anxiety about starting something new, is sent immediately to the amygdala. The amygdala processes emotions, especially fear, and that information is also sent to the prefrontal cortex, which decides whether the stimulus is a real threat or not. The thing is, it takes time for the information to reach the prefrontal cortex and make a more reasoned response. And that's why tools to reduce that emotion are helpful. Now that we know what's happening in the brain, here are two quick tools to reduce the immediate emotional charge so you can then act in a more thoughtful way. The two tools are naming or accepting and reframing. So naming or accepting is simply what it sounds like. For instance, if I feel worry, I will simply say I'm feeling worried, and I accept that that is what I am feeling without judgment. It's not wrong for feeling worried, it just is. That is naming or accepting, and it reduces activation in the amygdala and gives the prefrontal cortex time to make a more reasoned response. Reframing is taking the step of changing perspective on what you are feeling. For instance, if I'm feeling anxious about attending an event, I would name and accept that emotion, and then I might say something like, "When I went to a similar event in the past, I had fun." Another reframe is, I'm worried that people might not like me and will avoid me, but that has never happened in the past. People actually like me. As you might imagine, accepting and reframing reduce the unpleasantness that we experience from the original emotion. I'm going to give you another example of naming or accepting and reframing. The researcher Matthew Lieberman and his colleagues did an experiment in which they asked participants to look at photographs of snakes. One group was asked to name the emotion that came up for them, such as fear. They would say, "I feel afraid." Another group of participants was asked to reframe their reaction to the photograph. For example, they could reframe the photos of snakes as, "It's just a photo, it's not real," or "There are no snakes near where I live," and so on. And a third group just passively observed the photographs. I bet you can guess the results. When the first group of participants named their feelings about the snake photos, their unpleasantness ratings decreased, meaning they felt less negative emotion compared to the group that simply observed the photo. The group that reframed their emotional response to the photos had even lower unpleasantness ratings. They felt less negative emotion than the other two groups. The study showed that both naming or accepting and reframing worked to reduce the negative experience of the emotion. The groups of participants that named or reframed their experience of looking at the photograph of the snake also reduced the activation in their amygdala. Those two very simple tools produce significantly less activation in the amygdala than simply observing the photographs. Reducing the activity of the amygdala is a good thing. So this study and others clearly show that when you habitually accept your problematic emotions, you experience fewer negative emotions and they pass quicker than when you try to resist or deny them. And accepting our negative emotions leads to better psychological health. I've just scratched the surface of the impact of problematic emotions on the brain and our mental health and what you can do about it. To help me explore this a bit more, I've invited Lisa Peterson to the show. Lisa Peterson is the founder of the Wealth Clinic, which helps people heal their relationship with money so that they can stop the struggle and treat themselves with love. Prior to starting the Wealth Clinic, she worked in financial services for 25 years and earned her MBA in finance. She is also the author of The Mindful Millionaire, published by St. Martin's Press. So I'm excited to talk to you today, Lisa, about how coaches can help their clients cope with problematic emotions. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your coaching work and how you came to be doing the work you're doing now?
Yes. I have been coaching for the past 10 years after leaving my financial consulting practice. And the reason that I left helping people manage their money was I became far more interested in the emotional experiences that people were having with money. And when I did research, there wasn't a lot out there to help people change their behaviors. And I got really, really fascinated with why are some people really great with money and other people struggle their whole life with it. Sometimes people can have money and still worry about it all the time, or people don't have any money and they don't worry about it. Like, it was just completely fascinating to me. And that led me to starting my coaching practice. And in the beginning, it was all about my understanding of personal finance, but gradually I started to understand why I had been plagued with scarcity all my life and the things that I had been exposed to when I was growing up and how much they had affected my own relationship with money. I was really good with money. I had become a self-made millionaire by my mid-30s, so over 20 years ago, and yet I still worried about it. And I wanted to know how to not just help myself, but also help others.
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, money is a hot topic, and a lot of people have scarcity issues around money. So let me ask you, what came up for you as you listened to my preamble about problematic emotions?
It made a lot of sense to me. One of the things that I do to help my clients is I spend time in retreats, face-to-face, working with a group of people, talking about money challenges. And so I was thinking to myself how, even though I may not have been thinking about, oh, naming is so powerful to have people not be in that stress response or reframing, I see the power of what you're saying because I've witnessed how much it can help someone to normalize and talk about the experience that they're having with money and how they can start to make progress even without having to do a ton of work just by naming it, just by owning that this is an experience that I'm having.
Yeah. So reframing is a technique that a lot of coaches use, and that's really common. But I think the naming and accepting is less common. And yet that is so powerful because in addition to reducing the unpleasantness ratings, naming also brings you a sense of calm if you've tried it.
Completely.
Yeah. So I talked a bit about the impact of negative emotion on our psychological health, but how else does it impact your clients to deny their feelings or tolerate being triggered all the time?
One of the things that comes up a lot is people's tendency to self-sabotage. So they'll reach a certain level in their business or their personal life, and they're completely confused of like, why do I get to a place? And instead of it getting better, it actually goes backwards. I don't actually see them self-sabotaging, but what I do see is a really strong fear response that they're going to self-sabotage.
So you can see it before they even self-sabotage. So they seem to get into the high level of fear and then they self-sabotage.
And when they're hitting these upper limits, places that they've never gone before, amount of money that they have never held on to before or that they've never earned before, like when they start hitting those places, it seems like the fear gets activated way more than it did in the past. And then instead of making good decisions, they end up making maybe not the best decisions for the situation.
Yeah. So I gave the tools of naming or accepting and reframing as ways to lessen the charge of problematic emotions. So do you have tools that you use with your clients to help with that?
I do. Oftentimes, the style that I use in coaching more than anything else is asking a lot of very detailed questions. So I love getting to know my clients' situations, and I help in a lot of areas, but we're going to focus on money because that's the one that I spend the most amount of time with. So I want to know how somebody behaves with money. What are their actions with money? Are they struggling in certain parts of their experience with money? Because we're talking to coaches, we're talking to business owners in many cases. The conversation of money and how we respond to questions tends to open up a lot. Like I'll see people be really confident and all of a sudden they just stop talking. Like they see the walls that they've created or the fear that they run up against and they realize that they don't go further in asking themselves questions. So my job as a coach is to ask them more questions to understand what is happening inside of this experience with money.
So how do you help them get over that?
Naming and reframing are two of the things that I probably use on a regular basis. A big part of what I've discovered in this relationship with money that people have, there's a lot of shame and guilt that comes up. And if they don't realize that that negative emotion is prevalent in their experiences with money, it's really hard to change it. And so I'm trying to help them see what are the patterns inside of their experiences. And more often than not, when somebody's struggling with money, it's guilt, it's shame, it's fear of being greedy or selfish or not being fair. And so I'm looking for what is that? It's like a linchpin, the core of the belief systems that cause them the greatest amount of fear. And just by bringing that out to the surface, many times people have never even thought about the things that we're talking about. They're very particular in the pattern being repeated over and over again. And by noticing that that's a pattern and not just something that happens to everyone is the beginning of the process of helping somebody move beyond it. But I also like to think as a coach, my job is not to help people. My job is to give people information. And I give people information by asking really good questions to cause them to think about their experiences with money. For example, tell me your life story, but tell it to me through the lens of money. And just by starting to answer that question, people shift because it's not a question most people have ever been asked. They start opening up and going inside of their experiences. And because I've done this hundreds, if not thousands of times, I might detect patterns of where they're getting stuck in these problematic emotions.
So can you share a client's story or one of your own that illustrates what it looks like to gain some mastery over a problematic emotion?
One of the clients that I wrote about in my book, The Mindful Millionaire, had a background of never being supported in her decisions. And when she got married, she partnered and had children and found herself quickly in a situation where even though her husband was making enough money, he was spending it outside of the home to the point where she couldn't even buy diapers for her children. Electricity was being turned off because he was so irresponsible with money. And later, by the time I met her, she had started a company and was having okay success. Like she had 12 employees, but she was only making maybe $2,000 or $3,000 a month to survive on. And what we found in the course of working together was that her patterns of never really being told you're right, or feeling support and feeling like it's all happening to me rather than me having the ability to make really, really good decisions about myself and my money, just by the realization that this was a pattern in her past, that she had the tools to shift and begin doing something different, opened her up to the point where an example of like what really changed everything is she kept fighting me about raising prices. And she was like, no, my business will go under. No matter how much of the data I could show her of what would happen if she raised her prices and that it would be okay, she just couldn't get past it. And one day, finally, she was like, you know what? I've talked myself out of every single angle of why this isn't going to work. I'm ready to try it. And I think that also her uncovering her story and me validating that it's not her fault that these things happened. It just was. You said this earlier. It just is. It's like being able to validate that it's okay that this is your past, but that you can write a new story, that you can do things different in your business. She ended up increasing her prices. She ended up having an increase of about 30% because she got rid of the people that were really cheapskates in her business and were fighting her all the time. She had more time to support better clients who wanted more services from her. And so before you knew it, she was making $10,000-$15,000 a month, having only just kind of gone into debt to continue to run her business. So much of it is, I think, naming and reframing. It's just done in different ways by different coaches, is my guess.
Those are really two powerful tools, and yet they're so simple. And I bet you your client's life changed in other ways too, because of the work that you did with her.
Everything. I mean, it's, you know, relationship. Now she's in this like fully equal respect, honoring relationship that's the love of her life. Her business has continued to grow and grow. And I check in with her. And it's so fun, right? Because it's not just about that first move. It's about who do we become as we make those leaps, how confident we become in ourselves, and then what that does to propel us forward. Because that's a huge part of reinventing the difficult emotions. It's like it starts with that process, but then we continue to create a positive feedback loop that gives us a vision of like, oh my gosh, if that was possible, then what's next? And that's how she lives.
I get it. I mean, I can identify with her. I grew up with not being able to do anything right. So I can identify with your client, but I've made a lot of progress. So that's good. So let's talk about your book. So The Mindful Millionaire, what does it mean to be a mindful millionaire? And what do you want your readers to take from it?
It does not mean what we might think. You do not have to have $1 million in the bank and have a net worth of $1 million to become a mindful millionaire. It really is a mindset that believes that you have all the tools you need to create the life that you want to live. It's understanding and being able to know where your shadows or your problematic emotions are and no longer having those be the things that hold you back. And I wrote the book. At the time, I thought it was for all my clients. But now, 4 years after the book has come out and I spent about 5 years writing it, like I'm definitely sure that I needed this book because it took the things I was learning to a whole new level. And when you write a book, it's like, you better be practicing all those things you're teaching. And my life is just continuing to expand and grow as a result. But I took everything that I knew about coaching people around money and not just the emotional aspects of it, but the societal beliefs that were given and that were not given enough information about education with finance, and talked about an inner journey of how we can help ourselves with guilt and shame and the things we were talking about before. But I put everything in the book.
Well, congratulations on the success of your book.
Thank you.
So one of the things, right, that we talked about is naming or accepting. And a lot of people have trouble with accepting, right? Because they think that it means that they have to like it. But accepting is not about liking, right? It's just about acknowledging what is. And so when it comes to shame and guilt, do you encourage them to have some self-compassion?
Most definitely. It's easier said than done. Some people receive the idea of self-compassion with a whole open heart. And it's like, yes, I'm ready to do that. but not everybody's ready to do that. They still feel like maybe they did something wrong and they have a really hard time letting go of that wrongness about themselves. So forgiveness comes up a ton in all of the work that I do. And, you know, again, forgiveness is the same thing. Like, not everybody's ready to do that, to forgive others or to forgive themselves. But, you know, in my book, I talk a lot about forgiveness because it's been a big part of my journey. It's not about condoning bad behavior from yourself or other people, but it is about being able to say, I will no longer let this thing that happened dictate the rest of my life. And I want to let it go for my own health and for the health of others. You know, it's for me at the end of the day, not necessarily for other people. But that's a big one with money.
Yeah. And it's about stopping the judgment. And without that, I think it's hard to move forward, right? If you keep thinking that you've done something wrong, how are you going to move forward from that? It probably took me about 15 years to learn acceptance, right? I had heard about it, you know, and a coach I had at the time kept talking about it, but it still took forever. It is hard. It can be hard for a lot of people. But as soon as I got it, right, the acceptance, it is so freeing.
It is. And even I have compassion for myself because I feel like there can still be a trauma response for a split second where I'm like, oh, what did I do wrong? Like this split second. And then the next thought after that is like, okay, it is. It is what it is. Like just this feeling of acceptance coming over me. But the book isn't called Mindful Millionaire just because it's a fancy term. Like I've been a daily practitioner of meditation for the past 25 years. And this ability to be mindful of our thoughts and our actions and our feelings is really, really important as well.
Yeah, exactly. In the previous episode with Lyon Goodman, we talked about the predictive brain and how your brain predicts your next action or your next thoughts. And it's all based on your past experience. So past experience, it doesn't have to be conscious experience. So it's everything that happened to you from the time that you were born, and we could even go back further to previous generations. So that is what you do and think today. It's because of all of your past. And so it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And I am so grateful to coaching and to mindfulness practices because until I got the message, which was more than halfway through my life, that I could have some control of my thoughts, I really suffered a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Many people don't know that they don't have to believe their thoughts. And the thing is, once you accept how things are, these thoughts tend to go away too. They reduce those negative thoughts.
100%.
Yeah. So finally, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
I'm curious, is there any neuroscience about self-sabotage that says that that sort of thing is even happening, or is it a made-up thing?
Well, it's fear-based, right? Obviously. So it would be the amygdala, which processes emotion, but it's especially active when it comes to fear. It's probably something also in their past that they can't do anything right. And then when they do start to do things right and to earn the kind of income that they want, it's scary. So it's mostly fear. Yeah. And the thing is that emotions come up really quickly before you even know. They just happen. Consciously, we can think, well, they're not based on anything, but they are, because your heart starts beating faster before you're even aware. So all of your internal bodily sensations start before you're even aware that they're happening, and they send that information to the brain that then decides, so what does all this mean? And based on your past experience, the brain can decide that, oh, wow, this is scary territory. You know, I better stop now.
That's so helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not always rational. Actually, it's usually not rational.
Yeah. Well, that about sums up a huge percentage of people's behavior with money, quite frankly. It isn't rational. And I guess another way of saying what I'm encouraging people to do is to become more rational in your experiences with money if you know that that's something that hasn't worked out so well for you. And the cool thing is that just a little bit of progress in this area, if it's resonating with you, can have a dramatic impact in the amount of money you earn, the amount of money you keep, and the amount of money you invest so that you have more freedom if and when you want it, which to me has been the greatest gift I could possibly imagine for myself and for my family, to be financially free for the rest of my life just because of good decisions I made along the way.
Yeah. So what's the best way for listeners to find out more about you and your work?
You can go to wealthclinic.com/vision, and you can download the first chapter of my book and a meditation to help you with calming the fears that you have about money.
All right. So thank you so much, Lisa. This has been a really great conversation.
Thank you so much.
It's been fun. Thank you all for listening. And remember that your emotions are not bad or wrong. They simply are. At the same time, problematic emotions such as worry or anxiety can prevent you from living your life to the fullest. And chronically feeling stress or anger or fear can wreak havoc on your physical and psychological health. So it's important to intervene when you can to reduce their impact. I'm Dr. Irene O'Brien, and you've been listening to Neuroscience of Coaching. You can find out more about me at neuroscienceschool.com. The Neuroscience of Coaching is a part of the Miracy FM podcast network, which also includes such shows as Just Between Coaches and Consciousness Explored. This episode was produced by Cynthia Lamb. Danny Inney is our executive producer, and post-production was by Marvin Del Rosario. To make sure you don't miss great episodes coming up on Neuroscience of Coaching, please follow us on Miracy FM's YouTube channel or your favorite podcast player. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a comment or a star review. It's the best way to help us get these ideas out there to more people. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.